I'm Chris Messini, and my guest today is Ben Goldfarb, author of Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. Ben is an award-winning environmental journalist who covers wildlife management and conservation biology. His work is featured in Science, Mother Jones, The Guardian, Vice, and many other publications. He holds a master's degree in environmental management from the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies and lives here in Spokane. Ben, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So I have to admit, before reading this book, I knew almost nothing about beavers. And you lay out in the book the case that essentially beavers are nothing less than the single most important force behind the economic and ecological history of the country. So if that's the case, why do you think so many people are ignorant of the surprising and secret life of beavers?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, I think the reason is that we wiped them out. You know, historically, these animals would have been everywhere in North America, right? We know that when Europeans arrived on this continent, there were hundreds of millions of beavers here. And, you know, they built dams, they created ponds and wetlands, and those ponds and wetlands would have made North America a much wetter, lusher, more water-covered place. And those kinds of watery habitats would have been hugely important for all kinds of other species, you know, mm-hmm. from moose to waterfowl to fish to frogs. Of course, when we trapped out those hundreds of millions of beavers and turned them into fur hats back in Europe, we lost all of those critical habitats. And we also lost our perception of how abundant and important beavers were. So, you know, we sort of, you know, the 19th and 20th centuries were pretty beaverless here in North America. And I think that we sort of forgot how important historically and ecologically these animals really are.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that was most striking to me is your descriptions in the book of what this landscape might have looked like to somebody like Lewis and Clark who came here, you know, before this area was trapped at all. And so I wanted to get a little bit of the sound of your prose here. So would you be willing to read a section of
the
book?
Yeah, of course. Close your eyes. Picture, if you will, a healthy stream. What comes to mind? Perhaps you've conjured a crystalline, fast-moving creek, bounding merrily over rocks, its course narrow and shallow enough that you could leap or wade across the channel. If, like me, you are a fly fisherman, you might add a cheerful, knee-deep angler, casting for trout in a limpid riffle. It's a lovely picture, fit for an Orvis catalog. It's also wrong. Let's try again. This time, I want you to perform a more difficult, imaginative feat. Instead of envisioning a present-day stream, I want you to reach into the past. Before the mountain men, before the pilgrims, before Hudson and Champlain and the other horsemen of the furpocalypse, all the way back to the 1500s. I want you to imagine the streams that existed before global capitalism purged a continent of its dam-building, water-storing, wetland-creating engineers. I want you to imagine a landscape with its full complement of beavers. What do you see this time? No longer is our stream a pellucid, narrow, racing trickle. Instead, it's a sluggish, murky swamp, backed up several acres by a messy chain of woody dams. Gnawed stumps ring the marsh like punji sticks. Dead and dying trees stand aslant in the chest-deep pond. When you step into the water, you feel not rocks underfoot, but sludge. The musty stink of decomposition wafts into your nostrils. If there's a fisherman here, he's thrashing angrily in the willows, his fly caught in a tree. Although this beavery tableau isn't going to appear in any field and stream spreads, it's in many cases a more historically accurate picture, and in crucial ways, a much healthier one. In the Intermountain West, wetlands, though they make up just 2% of total land area, support 80% of biodiversity. You may not hear the tinkle of running water in our swamp, but listen closely for the songs of warblers and flycatchers perched in creekside willows. Frogs croak along the pond's marshy aprons. Otters chase trout through the submerged branches of downed trees, a forest inverted. The deep water and the close vegetation make the fishing tough, but abundant trout shelter in the meandering side channels and cold depths. In A River Runs Through It, Norman MacLean captured the trials and ecstasies of angling in beaver country when he wrote of one character, "So off he went happily to wade and ooze and to get throttled by brush and to fall through loose piles of sticks called beaver dams and to end up with a wreath of seaweed round his neck and a basket full of fish."
That was Ben Goldfarb, author of Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. And so obviously they've had a huge impact on the history of the landscape here. So what got you first interested in writing about beavers?
Yeah, I used to work for High Country News, which is a magazine that covers sort of environmental issues throughout the American West. And, you know, I think like most people, you know, I'd always had some beaver interest. You know, I'd seen them around while I was fishing or hiking or camping, but, you know, never thought too much beyond, hey, that's a cool critter.
Yeah.
But working for HCN, I ended up writing a couple of beaver articles about beaver relocations here in Washington. It actually turns out that Washington is probably the most progressive, forward-thinking state when it comes to beaver management. Hmm. So a lot of great beaver activity around here. You know, here in Spokane, the Lands Council does beaver relocations, and they're a fantastic group. So I did a couple of beaver articles for this magazine and began to recognize, talking to beaver scientists and land managers, just how historically important these animals are and how important they can be to solving many of our environmental problems today if we learn to embrace them back on our landscapes.
So you mentioned in that reading and also before that beavers not only create this wet landscape, but they also support a bunch of other wildlife. And in the book, you refer to them as keystone species. And other keystone species are things like salmon and grizzly bear and wolves. So can you explain a little bit more how beavers are like those and maybe why they don't hold the sort of esteem in our culture that those other keystone species do?
Yeah, great question. So the idea of a keystone species, so in architecture, the keystone is sort of the block at the apex of an arch that holds the entire arch in place. And when you take that critical block out, the arch falls apart. So a keystone species plays a similar role in an ecosystem, right? It's the animal that's disproportionately supporting a lot of other creatures. So beavers, of course, by building these critical wet habitats are playing that role. You know, so many animals are dependent on these watery habitats. You know, here in the Pacific Northwest, you know, salmon are a great example. Mm-hmm. If you're a baby salmon, you know, you don't want to live in kind of the fast moving main channel. You want to find a nice slow deep pond or eddy or backwater or side channel, and beavers create that fantastic juvenile salmon rearing habitat. So salmon are a species that's supported by beavers, along with waterfowl and moose and trout and amphibians and all kinds of other critters.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we recognize that beavers play that crucial role? You know, I think that a big part of it is that we beavers are hard to live with. You know, they're a challenging creature in a lot of ways. Of course, they clog up road culverts and flood roads. They flood people's property. They cut down people's apple trees. You know, they can be a pain in the butt. And I think that, you know, for so long we've been battling beavers in this country. We've been regarding them as the enemy and trapping them out every single time they cause some kind of conflict, that we fail to recognize how important they are for other creatures and for our landscapes.
So you mentioned the Lands Council here in Spokane. You also talk about the Metau Beaver Project in the book. And, you know, obviously these issues are close to home here, but you really highlight the Metau Project as somebody that's really at the forefront of reintroducing beavers to the habitat. So tell us a little bit more about that project and what they've done on sort of the east slope of the Cascades.
Yeah, so the Metau Beaver Project is based in the Metau Valley, and they basically live trap nuisance beavers, so beavers that are clogging up culverts or cutting down apple trees or what have you, and they relocate them high up in the Cascades on public land in the Okanagan-Wenatchee National Forest, where beavers can store some water, create some great wildlife habitat, keep streams hydrated, and basically do some good. And, you know, I think it's really cool here in Washington. Like I said, we really have a very progressive approach to beaver management. I mean, certainly we could be better in lots of ways, but, you know, compared to states like Oregon and California, we're really quite good. So there are lots of these different projects that are moving beavers around all over the state of Washington. And, you know, I mean, it's pretty cool the way that biologists from other states actually come to Washington, particularly to the Metau Valley, to learn from beaver practitioners here.
Mm-hmm.
We could certainly be a lot better in a lot of ways. But, you know, the Metau Project is sort of one of the state's flagship projects that's taught lots of other people how to relocate beavers in a way that, you know, is good for the animals. You know, it can be tough to make beavers stay where you put them, right? That's another right. kind of big part of all this. And the Metzau Project has figured that out about as well as anybody else.
Hmm. So we've obviously talked a lot about sort of the nuts and bolts, like science and history that's in this book, and there is a lot of that, but it's also, I found it a really enjoyable book to read, even if I wasn't, you know, interested in beavers, which I wasn't,
Most people aren't, yeah.
But, you know, you do a great job of weaving in sort of your personal experience and history, and I was really brought in by some of the weird anecdotes that you brought up historically, like, speaking of beaver relocation, there's an anecdote about parachuting beavers.
Right.
Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, for sure. So this is just next door in Idaho in the late 1940s, right after World War II. There was basically, there was sort of as the beaver population recovered in Idaho, there were sort of an increasing number of beaver conflicts, and the State Department of Fish and Game decided to solve those conflicts by relocating the beavers, and because it was sort of immediately post-World War II, they actually had on hand all of these surplus parachutes. Hmm. So the bright idea was basically to take these beavers up in an airplane, put them in these special crates designed to fall open upon landing, and throw them out of airplanes strapped to parachutes, which, you know, sounds crazy and was kind of crazy, but it actually worked incredibly well. I think they threw 76 beavers out of an airplane in 1948, and 75 of the beavers survived. Only
wow.
one beaver escaped from his crate in midair and unfortunately fell to his death. But when they came back the next year to see if the beavers had actually established in the places where they dropped them, they found that beavers had built dams and lodges basically everywhere they'd been released. So this was a kind of a nutty project, but actually quite successful.
Yeah. And it's little anecdotes like that make the book really enjoyable to read, as well as being kind of a hard science, nonfiction book about beavers and their history and how to coexist with them.
Yeah, you know, I found in my explorations of the beaver community, you know, the people who study and work on beavers tend to be eccentric. I think you mm-hmm. have to be, a little bit kooky to, spend your life working on a rodent.
Yeah.
I was really fortunate to spend a lot of my time talking to these really fascinating people who have devoted themselves to the beaver cause, and it was an honor to tell their stories in this book as well. I feel like it's a book about beavers, but it's really about the people who work on beavers and the mm-hmm. people who care about these incredible animals.
Yeah, and at the end of the book, you point out that even though the numbers of beavers in this country are a fraction of what they were 200 years ago, they're not endangered and they're not really even particularly rare. You know, you can see them around. So you end with the sentiment that it's not that the beavers need our help in a conservation stance, but that we actually need their help to solve some of our ecological problems. So what kind of problems can beavers help us solve?
Yeah, great question. So, I think one huge one is the creation of habitat for wildlife. We spend so much money in this country trying to bring back endangered species like salmon, mm-hmm. And beavers can be hugely valuable with that. They're great water storage devices, right? So they're building, thousands of reservoirs, which are trapping quite a lot of water. As the climate gets hotter and drier, these beavers are increasingly important when it comes to keeping water on the landscape as we lose our snowpack and glacial melt in the Cascades.
Mm-hmm.
They also improve water quality, right? I mean, these wetlands are basically filtering out nitrates, phosphorus, other agricultural pollutants from our water supply. So they're improving water quality. And another big one that we're just beginning to understand is they're providing really important fire breaks, right? I mean, there's been so much wildfire, in this area the last few years. And, beavers, by creating these lush, wet patches on the landscape, are sort of providing places where, fire can't spread, or where plants and animals can retreat during fires and then repopulate the landscape from those kind of refuges. In the Metzau Valley, I saw amazing places where you'd get beavers building a pond and the fire would burn to the edge of the pond, and then the other side of the pond would be green, be black on one side and green on the other. And it's like, well, here's a spot where beavers actually prevented the spread of wildfire. So I think we're just beginning to understand the ways in which beavers can help us adapt to this more fire-prone future. That's an increasingly large service they provide.
My guest has been Ben Goldfarb, who is the author of Eager, The Surprising Secret Life of Beavers and Why They Matter. Ben, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I appreciate it.